though it's worth noting that his religiosity was not like that of many educated Russians of his time, including Alexander I, at least in his last year. This wasn't restless searching for the meaning of life, for deep mystical truths. It wasn't even the sort of modern religion that we saw among, for example, the Decembrists, the belief that reason was a divine attribute. In his words, he, and these are what he said often, "I believe in the manner of a peasant, unquestioning, simple, faith, absolute, not inquiry." He was also known for a truly remarkable moral harshness that grew out of perhaps his fear and anxieties of disorder, but also out of his peasant-like faith. For one thing, despite his faith, he could forgive no one. As he pointed out, "Christ shall forgive, not me." In fact, even his greatest admirers were amazed by his absolute harshness toward offenders, toward sinners of all sort. He seemed to have a deep need to cast blame, and he couldn't forgive. Just as an example, he carried this so far as to even punish a physical object that he believed had sinned. In this case, a warship. This was during the war with the Turks in 1828, 1829, and a great frigate named Raphael had surrendered to the Turks. Nicholas issued in response to this news of this surrender an edict. He said that it's necessary to, quote, "wash off the shame brought upon the fleet and indeed Russia itself by this surrender." He said, "I consider, quote, this frigate to be unworthy in the future to fly the flag of Russia." And he ordered the admiral to burn the ship. Further complicating his political personality, the personality that shaped policy in so many ways, he cultivated an image as a family man. For the first time in Russia, one sees wide publication of images of the Tsar and his wife and his children, and very sentimental images. And he had a very sentimental persona for the public, almost a middle class, a bourgeois ideal of family life, loving and close and ordinary. And I should say this wasn't just a public image for public consumption, though it was partly that. We know that he personally cultivated with his family a very idyllic image of personal life. And this was most evident in the creation of a nice little cozy family retreat in a special mansion that was built for his family at Peterhof. He didn't want to be in this big, grandiose palace there. He wanted his own little cozy sort of Western bourgeois family home. It was designed appropriately by an English architect. It was designed in the Gothic style, seen as cozy in those days. And he called his house, in English, the cottage. And according to one recent historian, this whole idea of a cozy Gothic house was to express the goal of, in this historian's word, sequestered private life set aside from the noisome everyday world. This was indeed Nicholas's ideal. Now, in all these aspects, religion, morality, family life, you can see a particular cultivation of the idea of the ruler as virtuous. In other words, very much in the Russian tradition of the Tsar as not only Grozny, mighty and awesome, but also loving and pious and gentle, the Tishaishi Tsar we've talked about. Now, these questions of personality are obviously important in Russia, as we've seen, and this was especially true under Nicholas. Political power in Russia remained very personal, based on powerful individuals still much more than on laws. But what's also interesting about these years is for the first time one sees an articulation of a full-blown ideology of Russian politics, worked out by various associates of the Tsar, though they were very close to him, by conservative writers and intellectuals, and indeed these ideas fit the way Nicholas, who could never articulate it with this sophistication, but the way he really thought about Russian power. The importance of this formulation of official ideology, in fact, is so great. It was, by the way, called official nationality, at least later historians gave it this name. One can't underestimate how important these ideas were, not just for Nicholas I's reign, though they characterize it perfectly, but would remain in some ways the ideology of the Russian state to the very end, all the way to the end, to the reign of Nicholas II. And indeed, one could argue that one could see these same ideas even in Soviet communist politics as well, and maybe even today. There are three key ideas here: orthodoxy, autocracy, and nationality.